Blog Talk Radio. You are listening to Interfaith Sunday Services on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Every week, we broadcast Sunday services at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central Time, for all our global listeners. Our metaphysical ministers bring interfaith messages of enlightenment and upliftment, specifically available to all those who are open to hear the word of God, the Creator. We welcome you with an open heart and warmest blessings. Warmest greetings, and welcome to Greater Good Ministries Empowerment Hour, this day's Interfaith Sunday Services. I'm Reverend Barbara B. Delosier, and it gives me great joy to share the next hour with you here on GGM Radio. Our program today will feature a healing meditation entitled The Violet Mist. We'll be exploring our featured topic, UFOs in Ancient Times and Their Global Influence. And we will round out today's service with our affirmative treatment for positive reinforcement. And we'll share some wonderful music along the way as well. I invite you to join us for the Empowerment Hour every second Sunday of the month, and all of our services every Sunday, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Well, let's light our peace candle to begin today's service. Okay, today we're using a mixture of sandalwood, plumeria, and myrrh, essential oils for the highest blessings and spiritual purpose. The candle is the outer manifestation of our inner light and symbolizes the love and light of Creator Source. The essential oils we use help to create our sacred space. And now for today's invocation. Dear Creator, Source of all living things, we reach out to you from our hearts, minds, and spirits to tap into your unending well of universal energy. We see our conscious selves being absorbed into the consciousness of your divinity, wholly and completely, with unconditional love. Thank you for our now. Thank you for our beautiful planet Earth. Thank you for all the stars and planets in our universe. And thank you for your loving gift of light and sound. For these and all your bountiful gifts, we are grateful, and so it is. We invite you to join us here every Sunday for Interfaith Services. We've got a new schedule. The first Sunday of the month is Conversations from the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. That happens at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with yours truly, Reverend B, at 1 p.m. Eastern. The third Sunday of the month is the Light Giver Sunday Service and Worldwide Ascension Celebration. That is at 11 a.m. Eastern. The fourth Sunday of the month features In His Presence with evangelist Patricia Bennerman. And the fifth Sunday, when there is one, is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend B at 1 p.m. Eastern. I invite you to visit our website, ggmradio.com, for our new programming schedule. We've got quite a few new things up on the schedule for your listening pleasure. Time now for our guided meditation. That's how we usually like to start off today's service. We are using a wonderful meditation music. It is by Jason Welsh of SourceVibrations.com. It runs at 741 hertz. The song is called Conscious Awakening. Today's meditation, entitled The Violet Mist, is taken from the teachings of Reiki Master and creator of Reiki, Dr. Mikao Usui. Get comfortable, either sitting with your feet on the floor, hands placed in your lap, or lying down if you prefer. We begin by taking three deep cleansing breaths, in through the nose and out through the mouth. Breathe in love. Breathe out gratitude. Breathing in love. Breathing out gratitude. One more. Breathing in love. Fill your lungs, fill your tummy. Exhaling gratitude. Now, as you begin to breathe in at a normal rate, imagine white light coming down through the crown chakra. That's the top of your head. Feel this white light spreading down through your sinuses, across your tongue, down your throat, and into your lungs. Visualize the pulsating white light moving down and down throughout your chest, down the front of your body, past your navel, down into your tummy and internal organs. Visualize every organ, including your skin, to be positively charged with healing white mist. Watch this healing white mist as it swirls throughout your body, down through your legs, down through your arms. The white mist totally and completely envelops you, caressing every atom, every cell of your beingness. Allow this white mist to slowly turn to blue. See the white begin to take on an ice blue color that changes and morphs into a deep sky blue, then into a deeper blue. As the color changes from white to blue, you notice that the mist is beginning to rotate clockwise, swirling softly and gently. See all your energies get caught up in this gentle rotation as the color changes from deep blue to a brilliant violet, still with tinges of blue and gold within the swirling mist. You are now enveloped in this wonderful swirling mist inside and outside of your being. As this mist swirls around and within you, you are being healed spiritually, physically, emotionally, and psychically. Through this mist, you begin to visualize your special guide, your guardian angel, Saint Germain, perhaps Jesus, whoever it is you revere, trust, and love. See them in the gently swirling violet mist and visualize yourself incorporating the loving energies that they have for you, healing you, soothing you, comforting you. Allow yourself to bask in these powerful loving energies, letting yourself flow in and out, ingress and egress. You are feeling lighter and lighter as the loving energies lift you into the gently swirling violet mist. You feel lighter and lighter as you move higher and higher, and you rise above any troubles, problems, or hardships that have negatively impacted you. Allow yourself to come back as the gently swirling mist ebbs away into your crown energy center like a vacuum. Every trace of violet mist is now being absorbed into your being through the top of your head, your crown chakra. Open your eyes when you feel ready, because you are now totally refreshed, invigorated, and ready to move on with your day. We'll be back with today's topic of discussion, UFOs in ancient history and how their presence may have influenced us as a global culture. After this GGM creative music break. Warrior Shield with Rich Price. A song about God's love for us and how his love burns in our heart. Wonderful. You know, we are all warriors. Absolutely. Spiritual warriors, as it were. Today's topic, UFOs in ancient times and the influence they have had on our world. Since the beginning of time, when man first crawled out of their caves and gazed in awe of the star-filled night skies, mankind has been intrigued by the unexplained mysteries of the universe. Early myths and legends from numerous cultures tell of mysterious objects coursing across the heavens. Pieces of ancient documents allude to unexplained anomalies in the air. Early cave paintings depicting flying machines in many forms and ancient astronauts hovering in the skies above them. Virtually every religion relates visitations in some form or other from angels, demons, and gods who descended to Earth in aerial flying crafts in ancient times. In modern times, man has documented a number of sightings of strange crafts being witnessed, roaring across the skies, some even landing or crashing. Aerial crafts have been documented as early as 1870. In modern times, that is, yet a vast number of ancient writings imply visitations long before 1870. In 1500 BC, Pharaoh Thutmose III in Egypt saw circles of fire in the sky that he claimed emitted a foul odor. He also saw flying disks, history tells us. Did the pharaoh see and smell the exhaust of departing crafts, or perhaps the jets of ascending crafts? Whichever it was, his senses were in full control and alight with something extraordinary. Landing strips were built in 800 BC in the Peruvian Andes. That's about 1,600 years prior to the creation of the Nazca Lines in southern Peru. If these were landing strips and lines were created for sky travelers, this would describe hundreds of years of aerial activities over Peru. In 329 BC, Alexander the Great told of strange shield-like objects that were ringed with fire that repeatedly harassed his army as they were attempting to cross the Jaxartes River. 1700 BC, Lycosthenes described a spectacle of a fleet of airships flying overhead at Lanudium. Hope I got that out right. These ships so distracted Lycosthenes that he reported it over and over again to his elders, as well as common folk, and these reports were passed on into history. In 99 BC, Julius Obsequens of Rome described a round object like a globe coursing across the sky from west to east. Julius Obsequens also described a globe of golden fire gyrating in the sky and falling to earth, then rising and ascending into the sky after emitting a terrific noise. Pliny the Elder described a burning shield scattering sparks that ran across the sky in 85 BC. In Roman times and Egyptian times, burning globes, fiery shields, and spheres that looked like balls of brilliant lightning were seen in the skies. But what of prehistorical times? A band of scholarly individuals dug through old documents and discovered that the UFO phenomenon appeared periodically throughout history. Gradually, UFOlogists began to believe that gods, angels, devils, and demons may have been nothing more than alien visitors. Ancient astronauts became highly publicized in the popular book Chariots of the Gods by Eric von Daniken. This led to the creation of an international ancient astronaut society. many intelligent minds began to understand that aliens from outer space may have guided humankind in its evolutionary ascent, even going as far as proposing that ancient unexplained mysteries have brought mankind to its present-day elevation of ascension, and that we are still being so guided. There's an impressive amount of evidence in support that ancient astronauts visited Earth in prehistory. Noted astronomer, astrophysicist, and cosmologist Carl Sagan said, "Our tiny corner of the universe may have been visited thousands of times in the past few billion years. At least one of these visits may have occurred in historical times," said Sagan, theorizing that Earth has been visited by various galactic civilizations many times during prehistoric times, and that it is not out of the question that artifacts of such extraterrestrial visits might still exist, or that some kind of alien base is maintained within our solar system to provide continuity for successive expeditions. Coming from such a respected scientist, it is palpable to surmise that the idea of Earth being seeded by extraterrestrials could very well be true. And if we accept this theory as a possibility, then it is an easy jump to consider that ancient colossal structures such as the pyramids in Egypt were orchestrated with extraterrestrial help. You know, one has to wonder, how would man be able to build a perfectly constructed design comprised of over 2.5 million stone blocks, each stone with an average weight of 2.5 tons, as efficiently and as expediently as they did? Did the Egyptians have access to unlimited manpower in hundreds of thousands, and the wood or materials to construct ramps over 500 feet high and covering almost 12 acres to complete such a feat? Seems illogical to think such a governing entity could conscript that many slave workers over a 20 to 30 year period, no matter how powerful or tyrannical the governing entity may have been, without exhausting its manpower resource. Would erecting tombs for dead pharaohs be considered a worthy task on which to expend so much time and manpower? And another question. Would ancient Egypt, with a population of only a few million, stand such a drain of numbers for 10, 20, even 30 years? It would seem that such a massive work as the pyramids may very well have been built with the intervention of ancient astronauts who used the energy from the power plants aboard their aerial craft to hoist the colossal stones into place with incredible precision. Contemporary science recognizes the Sumerians as the earliest civilization of which there are records and which show their culture blossoming into modern magnificence over 6,000 years ago. Yet, the reason for their sudden progress remained a mystery until recent times. In the 1980s, science determined that the quantum leap in the intellectual development of Sumer was more than a miracle. Cuneiform was writing recorded a dramatic starburst, the death of a star in a brilliant explosion, which fostered Sumerian growth literally overnight in evolutionary terms. The Sumerians gave the world the first love song, the first school system, the first directory of pharmaceutical concoctions, a law code, and the first parliament. The roots of Judeo-Christian religious beliefs grew from the tree of knowledge, the Garden of Eden, which tradition places in that same area. The origins of Western culture were nursed in Sumer, and it has come to be acknowledged as the cradle of civilization, all because of the starburst. Were the Sumerians so overwhelmingly inspired by the starburst that they were stimulated into creating writing, law, education, and many of the essential concepts of science? Or had they received some overt physical assistance and instruction from survivors who might have been escaping the supernova, the death of their own son? The great metaphysician Rudolf Steiner theorized that the people of our prehistory had been largely guided and directed by a higher order of beings who interacted and communicated with certain humans, the smartest, the strongest, the most intellectual, flexible. Eventually, these select humans produced divine human beings who in turn could relay instructions from higher intelligences. In effect, Steiner may have given us another definition of the semi-divine progeny that the ancient Hebrews named Nephilim, which does in fact mean demigod, men of great renown. Steiner went on to speculate that within the larger evolving human race were the descendants of those divine human hybrid beings, men and women who are animated by higher ideals, who regard themselves as children of a divine universal power. Steiner believed that within what he termed the emerging sixth post-Atlantean race would be the children of the divine universal power, who would be able to initiate those men and women who have developed their faculty of thought so that they might better unite themselves with the divine. The children of the divine universal power, those who have the seed within them, will be able to initiate the more advanced members of humankind. People so initiated will be able to receive revelations and perform what others will consider miracles. This all sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? The initiates will go on to become the mediators between humankind and the higher intelligences. The whole point of the efforts of these higher intelligences is to enable humankind to become more independent, more able to stand on its own feet without having to rely on the higher order of beings that directed us in ancient times. John W. White, internationally known author in the fields of consciousness and higher human development, making an observation about Jesus Christ, wrote that the importance of Jesus was not that he was a human like us, but rather that we are gods like him, or at least we have the evolutionary potential to be so. White continues that Jesus the man was a historical person, but the Christ is an eternal transpersonal condition of being, or Christ consciousness. In Mr. White's view, Jesus was an evolutionary forerunner of the higher race that will inherit the earth, a race of people that will embody the Christ consciousness on a species-wide basis rather than the sporadic individual basis seen earlier throughout history. In fact, White gave this higher race of beings a name, Homo Noeticus, which pertains to higher consciousness and the evolving form of humanity. White further states that we are not simply human beings. We are human becomings, standing between two worlds, two ages, with the latent ability to take conscious control of our evolution and thereby become members of the new humanity as taught by Jesus. Jesus did not say that the highest state of consciousness was his alone for all time, but rather, he called upon us to follow him and his example. What was Jesus teaching 2,000 years ago that applies to extraterrestrial beings and beings of a higher nature? Jesus carried the cosmic energy that enlisted the higher realms to raise the awareness of modern man. Ahead of his time, perhaps, he spoke about the literal transmission of energy being broadcast to Earth from some higher realm. The apostles were so glowing with this cosmic energy that they appeared to be on fire to those who witnessed the absorption of the Christ consciousness into their physical bodies. Presbyterian minister Barry Downing, in his book, The Bible and Flying Saucers, wrote that Jesus was an extraterrestrial sent to earth to rid the world of sin. He cites biblical lines such as John chapter 8, verse 23, "You are from below, I am from above. You are of this world, I am not of this world." In Ezekiel chapter 1, verses 1 through 28, a description of an arriving craft with occupants. "Behold, a stormy wind came out of the north, and a great cloud with brightness around it, and fire flashing forth continually. And in the midst of this fire was gleaming metal. From the midst of it came the likeness of four living creatures who had human likeness." Interesting. In Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 through 22, describes the mating of extraterrestrials and humans. "Man began to multiply, and daughters were born to them. The sons of God saw that the daughters of man were attractive, and they took them as wives." The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and afterwards, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of man, they bore children to them. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness." The Lord Jehovah of the Old Testament, who became the Lord Jesus of the New Testament, is described as flying in thick black clouds, swift clouds, bright clouds, dark clouds, white clouds, low clouds, great clouds, and fiery clouds. There are platforms, vessels, whirling chariots of fire, sky thrones, fiery horses, cherubims, thick darkness, great fire, whirlwinds, fiery wheels, pavilions, dark waters, storms, sky dwellings, wolves, and sanctuaries. Whether or not one believes these objects are actually flying vehicles that the God of the Bible lives in, appears with, travels in, and is considered the seat of his power is a matter of opinion. The fact that they do not appear without him or his ambassadors, and that in most major appearances, he and other beings are clearly described as directly associated with these flying objects is undeniable. There are 362 verses describing natural and man-made objects as vehicles in the Bible. 362. The fact that the objects described in the Bible are controlled flying craft is born out of the flight characteristics of those objects. In Bible text, the objects associated with the Elohim are shown to exhibit rapid, prolonged flight. They ascend, they descend, and they hover for extended periods. If these objects were just ethereal images created by ethereal beings, these flight descriptions would have no relevance. The fact that the authors wrote about the flight routine of these objects is evidence that they have a distinct physical presence. There are 162 verses describing the specific flight characteristics of vehicles in the Bible. 162. In closing out today's topic of discussion, UFOs in ancient history and how they have impacted us as a culture, as a world global culture. Let us consider the numerous petroglyphs of flying men and aerial crafts. Let us consider the massive construction of Stonehenge and of the Great Pyramids in Egypt. Let us consider the many submerged cities that have been discovered around the globe. And let's not forget mysterious crop circles or the Peary Reese map of Earth as seen from the heavens. The mystery of legends and folklore of ancient peoples Native American, Aboriginal, the mathematics of the Mayan calendar, the Tibetan Drupa discs, the Nepalese Laladof plate. All these wonders point to extraterrestrial influence. Italy, France, Japan, Russia, Australia, China, Mexico, Ecuador, every corner of the globe has ancient petroglyphs and cave drawings of flying discs, spaceships, and men in spacesuits. The Bible, one of the most revered works on the planet, makes mention of activities from the heavens. It is up to you to decide what you are willing to accept as truth. As for me, I not only believe, I know. And with that, I peacefully end today's topic of discussion. Next up is today's affirmative treatment after this short break. Welcome back. A little music break with Reverend Rich Price. Song entitled Precious One. Hey, if you're interested in looking further into Rich Price's music, check him out at www.soundclick.com/richprice. Okay, time now for our affirmative treatment. Today's affirmative treatment is about the I Am presence, the God Self within, or the great I Am. Today, we will be practicing the presence of the I Am, which you can continue to do throughout the week. If you wish, do so by declaring these affirmative treatments upon awakening during the day and before you go to sleep at night. Say each affirmative treatment 3 times each and allow yourself to absorb the power of cosmic energy to assist in your own ascension. With positive affirmations, we always like to suggest that you say them in sets of 3 times, and that's why it's good to use a trigger point. I like to use upon rising in the morning, noontime or lunchtime, and the evening. That kind of gives you something to follow, a trigger point that will remind you. Some folks like to use when they pass through a doorway. They use the doorway as a trigger point. Some folks like to use the opening and closing of a car door as a trigger point. Whatever works for you is, and that reminds you to repeat your affirmations. I used to drive long distances to work, and I had my affirmations taped to the horn on my steering wheel. In the center of my steering wheel, I had a little card, an index card, and I had my affirmations taped on there. And when I was stuck in traffic or if I was at a red light, normally it was being struck in traffic in the Baltimore area, I would repeat my affirmations, and that would be a trigger point for me. Of course, not a good idea while you're cruising down the road at 70 miles an hour, but of course, when you're stopped, there it is right in front of you when you're steering wheel. So just a thought about your positive affirmations. These affirmations are easy to remember. If you want, I'll be saying them slowly. You can repeat after me if you like, and you can do your affirmations right now on the radio with me, or you can write them down. I am healing. All worry is gone. I am healing. All worry is gone. I am healing. All worry is gone. I am bonding. All burdens are gone. I am bonding. All burdens are gone. I am bonding. All burdens are gone. I am peace. All anger is gone. I am peace. All anger is gone. I am peace. All anger is gone. I am saved. All suffering is gone. I am saved. All suffering is gone. I am saved. All suffering is gone. I am abundant. All lack is gone. I am abundant. All lack is gone. I am abundant. All lack is gone. I am liberated. All judgment is gone. I am liberated. All judgment is gone. I am liberated. All judgment is gone. I am joy. All sorrow is gone. I am joy. All sorrow is gone. I am joy. all sorrow is gone. I am one with all life. All separation is gone. I am one with all life. All separation is gone. I am one with all life. All separation is gone. I am love. All fear is gone. I am love. All fear is gone. I am love. All fear is gone. I am one with the all that is. All loneliness is gone. I am one with the all that is. All loneliness is gone. I am one with the all that is. All loneliness is gone. I'm guessing that you catch the common thread here in our affirmative treatment today. We are using words to instill in us the practicing of the presence. When you hear people talk about practicing the presence, it means more than simply practicing. It means that you are being. It means that you are becoming. By saying, I am love and all fear is gone, we are making a declaration that we, as beings, are made of love. We are practicing the concept of the presence of love. We are releasing all fear and not allowing fear to reside in our beingness. Love takes the place of fear. When we fill ourselves with love, there is no room for fear. When we make the declaration, I am joy, all sorrow is gone, what we're doing is we're stating, sorry if you're hearing that in the background, we are broadcasting today from my Reverend Nancy Becker's home. As many of you know, Nancy Becker left this world the end of April, and we are up at her home, and we are creating the home for sale. So if you hear some movement in the background, I hope you think of Reverend Nancy and say a small prayer for her and for her peace. That would be so appreciated by the family. I am joy. All sorrow is gone. That's a good one for right now. To live in joy, to practice the presence of joy in your life. Again, as with love, when your heart is filled with love, there's no room for fear. The same is with joy. When you fill your being with joy, when you recognize that the good in all things, there's no room in your heart for sorrow. Well, this is not to say that it's not good to mourn or to feel pain for loss, if you will, but not to dwell in that pain, not to dwell in that sorrow, to recognize the good in all things that happen to us. I am one with the all that is. Well, if you follow the concept, there is one creator source, then by declaring I am one with the all that is, the Creator, then you are placing yourself in the midst of the Creator Source energy. Earlier we were talking about the difference between Jesus and the Christ consciousness. The way I see it, the Christ consciousness is the energy from Creator Source. Jesus tapped into that energy. He shared that energy with his fellow man. That's what we do when we declare, I am one with the all that is. All loneliness is gone. When you tap into that energy, you are part of the group consciousness, the consciousness of the all. You're not lonely then. You're never alone when you tap into that energy of the all. By declaring, I am liberated and all judgment is gone, you're clearing yourself. You're giving yourself the freedom to express you as you and not to place judgments on who you are or who others are. I mean, not only do we judge others, we judge ourselves as well. So by declaring, I am liberated, you remove yourself from the equation and all judgment is gone. By declaring, I am abundant, you are claiming all lack is gone. You are abundant. You have all within you. All that you need is given to you through your own resources. I'm not saying that a man gets off a bus and hands you $1 million. Well, I mean, for some of us, that might be a real cool thing. If I could spend $1 million pretty darn easily. But by claiming and declaring your abundance, you are removing lack. I am abundant. All lack is gone. That opens the doorway between abundance and lack. It opens the doorway so you can pass through the doorway to your prosperity. Not a bad idea. Remember, as above, so below. When you declare your abundance in the higher realms, because your thoughts have wings, and when you say those words and you think those thoughts, they are trapped in the higher planes where they can filter down into the physical. It kind of goes with saying, here on the physical plane, we are the lowest level, if you will, if you want to see it as a linear thing, a vertical thing, we are the lowest level. So whatever we put out into the higher realms trickles down, manifests in the physical. So declare your abundance. I am abundant. All lack is gone. And so it is. I am peace. All anger is gone. Oh, believe me, it's so easy to get frustrated. You know that. I know that. It's so easy. And it's okay for a brief moment to feel that. Soul wants to feel the experience. It wants to know all the experience here on earth, whether it's happy things or frustrating things. Okay, so you allow soul to feel it for the moment and then let it pass. Holding anger inside does nothing more than to physically make you ill. And this is truth. Anger causes stress. Stress causes physical disease. Now, anger is not a physical thing, is it? So it must be as above, so below, eh? Anger is the emotion. The emotion causes stress. Stress causes dis-ease. So declare, I am peace. All anger is gone. I am healing. All worry is gone. I like that one too. I am healing. Every part of my being is changing, rearranging, and healing. I love that idea because it is truth. Remember, again, as above, so below. When you place the thought out into the universe, I am healing. All worry is gone. There's that trickle-down effect. It manifests in your physical reality. Think about it. Even if your heart doesn't truly embrace all the words, don't worry, just say it, because you're sending it out to the universe and it comes back to you. And with that, I'd like to send warmest blessings to each and every one of you today and every day. Keep a smile on your face and trust the process of life. Please visit our website, ggmradio.com, to learn more about our programming. Until next time, my friends, be loved, be blessed, be joyful. We'll look forward to seeing you again on the next time. Warmest blessings. Bye now. Wait.
drops like a lemon drops high above the chimney top. That's where you find.